game. Recognizing the number, who the fuck is that calling?
I turn three pages, don't play, I'm tracing for Stalin. Blowing an ass at a clothesline on the past. When I pass, don't gotta be the forecast. Sit back, watch that sand turn to glass. Glass heat up, beat a new form and give a pass.
The power of suggestion, a poor man's mule.
Set the sails a little high, crash and kiss a full moon. Been soaking in an old man's tomb. Ran out of the room and jumped out of the womb.
So easy to forget.
The present day is so easy to forget. Just don't.
Sinodang Hedang, or I should say Sinodalang Hedang. How is the state of your spirits today? Dalang Eth on the Angalagang. I'm honored to be in your presence. This is Woody Morrison. I'm here with Ganarji. She's pushing the buttons and moving the whatchamacalls. And so this is a new program. Today's our third show called Language to Language. Mm-hmm. We're here at 101.9 at CITR in at UBC in the beautiful territory of the Musqueam, the unceded territory, I should say. And so today we don't have much in the way that we're cluttered up, we'll put it that way.
Uh-huh.
What we do have is quality. So later we have a call-in from Dorothy Grant. Dorothy is Haida. She's from the Raven side, which is Yakchanas. The males are called Yaklanas, and the female Yakchanas. So she's the wife of or the Raven woman. And she's also from the Two-Fin Killer Whales, the Hans Ilkestung. She's those of you who don't know who she is, she's a designer, too. She began designing traditional Haida garb, which about 25 years ago, and some people may say, well, the shirts, that's not traditional. If they're doing it, it's traditional. So we don't separate out the tradition and current or modern day. So anyway, by way of introduction, since this is language, Kaunsanga Inudikya Ang. In Haida, I'm called Kaunsanga, walking day. That's a person who walks in the room carrying a newborn child, someone who brings a special day. The body of the people or the entire population, I don't like the word nation, it involves, hints to a political organization, but the body of Haidas is called Kuala. And I'm from the eagle half of it. Some of the southern Haidas use the word out for eagle, but for us that's the young one, because we got the word tzak from the Dene people when they came back north after the ice melted. The bald eagle came with them, and so that's their word. So I'm from the eagle half of the Haida population. And my crest is Zetlanas Hat I U Di Ijung. I'm Haida Tzatlana, and our crest is an eagle with two heads. But in reality, it's two eagles sitting on a branch facing opposite directions, so it looks like one eagle with two heads.
Ah.
And the reason for that, we get all of our crests from historic events. A man and his brother had been visiting at another village, and when they came home and entered his house, he learned that the one we call Nat Yak'u, his true nephew, the one that was to inherit from him, had gone home. In other words, we don't use they passed away or they died. No, he went home. And so the body was lying there in the house, and the uncle was very, very upset. And to clean his mind, he started to go out the door, and as he ducked his head to go through there, and then he raised it as he was coming out, he saw those two eagles sitting on a branch, looking like one eagle with two heads. So to commemorate that event, he adopted that as the crest for us Atlana people. And the word Atlana is the name of a village. It came from, the original village was called East Langai. That was when the ice first melted and the water was coming up, and this rock was sticking out of the ground, so to speak. And it later became known as Langara Island, which is on the northwest coast of Haida Gwaii. So anyway, the village there was called East Langai. And then when the tsetl, which is a bird, the Pacific golden plover, it flies from New Zealand across Hawaii. It makes landfall here in the eastern Pacific by Haida territory and continues on up into the Arctic north and northern part of what's now Alaska, where it nests, has its young. And then when they're ready, they fly back across that flyway all the way back to New Zealand. And because of an event in which those birds were followed to make it home, the village became known as Tetlana rather than East Langai. So that is where we get our crest name from. And in English, Dr. Woodrow Morrison, B.A.J.D., Hinu Dia Atzhat I Kilkya Am. So in English, sometimes I use the title doctor because I have a Juris Doctorate degree, which I got I entered in 1982. And in the States, it was referred to as a terminal degree, so if I choose to use doctor, I may. Whereas here in Canada, it's a fairly new degree, and so Canadian graduates don't use it. The Auchin Chayang Hinu Hatkirt Virginia Cloud Hinu maiden name guy Laga Hidan. In Haida, my mother was called Chayang. Her English maiden name was Virginia Cloud. Wagyan de Hung Hansen, Woodrow Morrison Sr. Kyagan, Iskandla Di Hatkit Kyagan. When that's my father's Haida name, was La Dai. He was chief of the Brown Bear House. And in English, he was Woodrow Morrison Sr. And we use the word, when you hear the word Kyagan, it ends with a G-A-N, that means that he had one time been alive, but is no longer there. Same with my mother. But with mine, I have an N-G at the end, Hinudi Kya-ang, rather than Kya-gan. So anyway, that's how we introduce ourselves. And then my home, where I was born and raised, is called Hikta Handlai in Haida. Beside the fresh water where all the people go to eat, the English name is called Heidelberg. It's on the Alaska side of the border, and we're known as K'is Hat'ai. K'is is something very, very old. So we're the old ones, the old people. The central Haidas from Haida Gwaii, from Masset area, we call Au Hat'ai. Ho is a big bay. Hat'ai is humans. And then the Skidigit people we called Layu Hat'ai, which is the Round Rock Beach people. So anyway, that's a very short Haida lesson. And I've got a little bit of laryngitis today, so I'm going to try not to talk too much. I've been accused of doing that. But when you're on radio, that's what you're supposed to do.
What you're supposed to do.
So do you have some more music for us?
Yeah, we
there?
Sure do. We've been listening to Susan Aglicart. The first song we heard was This Child. And so we're going to continue on with the show and switch it up a little bit and listen to some language by the My Girls.
My Girl, yeah.
My Girls.
My Girl, not
Here
My
we go.
Girl. My Girl.
I don't mean to offend you, Woody, especially after you talked about nations in that way, the way you did. But this song is called New Nation. Can you handle it?
Okay.
Oh, okay, just this once. All right, here we go. New Nation on CITR.
Be gentle.
Okay, here we go.
Got Dorothy Grant on the line here, so we'll be welcome here just momentarily. And can you hear me, Dorothy?
I can hear you. It's a bit faint.
Hello. Oh. Welcome to the program, Language to Language, at 101.9 FM.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Woody?
Yeah. It's my earphones here aren't very good. But anyway, I wanted to invite you to come on our program. It's called Language to Language. Because you grew up pretty well, you know, with a lot of tradition, and then the work that you do with your fashions, I guess, is another way of expressing the language. So anyway, So how you been doing, Dorothy?
I've been doing really, really good. Thanks, Woody. I'm just really busy in this Christmas season. I'm kind of being a Santa Claus helper, I guess.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Where can we find your clothing, Dorothy?
DorothyGrant.com.
DorothyGrant.com.
I will be hosting an event in Vancouver this weekend at the Hotel Vancouver.
Oh, wonderful. And what date will the fashion show begin?
It's not a fashion show. It's a sales show, and it's in a hotel suite that I do this for my Christmas clientele, because for 18 years I had a store in downtown Vancouver
at the Sinclair Center,
and I closed that 2.5 years ago, and all because of economy and really just making business sense. So this has worked very, very well for me. In fact, my web store is just it's booming. It's got a pulse, a strong pulse, and I'm really happy.
Well, I'm really curious to find out from you, how did it designing clothes using crests from your nation change how people felt about themselves as First Nations people from your perspective?
Well, it really, clothing, in the way that I design it, I feel that it's a real conduit into transformation about the way one feels about themselves. It brings out a sense of pride, a lot of things, and I mean, clothing is personal anyways, but for First Nations people, I think with designing work like this, it has that transformative power, I believe, because I mean I've witnessed that for the last 24 years of my making Feast Wear Clothing.
Well, how did you get into it?
long story. I don't think we have enough time for that, but perhaps in the book it will all be clear.
Oh.
Basically, I started out as a weaver of spruce roots and making regalia for dancers, and then there was a conversation amongst these master artists such as Bill Reed, Robert Davidson, Joe David, Art Thompson. They all talked about innovation, because this was in the early 80s. And nobody was doing really serious, broad jumps into making something, some statement in other mediums. And it was Bill Reed who said, well, somebody has to do fashion. And I'm kind of sitting on the sidelines thinking, I can do that. And kind of the light bulbs went off in my head, and that's where it began, really.
Wow. And now look at you. Your clothing is recognized internationally.
Yeah, it's quite something, really. I mean, I'm always amazed at it when I reflect on 24 years ago. Wow. It really doesn't seem like it, but a lot has happened in between those times. I mean, I've gone through 3 recessions during that time. I've produced thousands and thousands of garments for various people, not just First Nations, but other tribal people in the United States and across Canada. So that really makes me feel good that it is recognized.
Other than the fact that this is Haida, what else is it about your work that sets yours aside from the others? Like the materials you use, or?
I think longevity has a lot to do with it, in a maintenance of quality. I can talk about this in the sense of one has to have a vision. One has to have a mission statement that you're rooted in everything in life, whether it's just your education or whatever you do. But for business, that's what you're taught. But for me, even a mission statement in life has been, you have to know where you come from and be proud of that. And I think that comes through in my clothing, and it's recognized, and more so probably the quality in that I don't think I compromise on my quality. I mean, I really try hard for that.
Yeah, your clothing line is considered very classy, in fact, you know. And the price range, what is the price range of your clothing?
Well, there are various categories of my clothing. I've got three labels, the Red Raven line, the Dorothy Grant Gold label, and the Feastwear. And, of course, I started out with Feastwear, which was the very, very high end in the earlier days. But when I had a store, I created these other two labels for basically general public, which represents sportswear, like active outdoor wear. And then the DG Gold label represents like kind of your Pret-a-Porter kind of office wear, kind of the mid-range price range. But I'm also doing leather accessories and silk scarves. And that's produced by another supplier here in Vancouver for me, and that's the thing that's just going great and selling. Basically, every day I'm shipping out product from that line.
Wow! And do you design the crests that are on your clothing line, or do you contract artists to work with you?
No, I design most of it. In the earlier days, I collaborated with another artist, and I still continue to do that, but it's under my label. But most of the work is my own design work.
Wow.
So this event you have coming up, is that sort of like a Christmas special?
Yeah, it is. Because I don't have the store in downtown Vancouver, there's, my sort of faithful clientele that wants to come in and shop and, just stop in for a visit. I call it the sane way to shop because it's inside a hotel suite.
Mm.
And few people know about it, but the public is welcome to come in. We're just putting together on the website. If people want to shop on the website, it's got a full operational web cart store. And we're announcing 20 to 40% off on a lot of items.
So it's dorothygrant.com?
That's right.
Yeah, great. Wow, what a great idea to people come into your hotel room. And will you be there for like a week or something,
a
day?
It's Saturday and Sunday. What is that date? 14th and 15th.
14th and 15th. Go check out Dorothy Grant at Vancouver Hotel.
Yeah, that's. I think it's 900 West Georgia Street.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to ask concierge when you get there where I'm at, because it is a hotel suite.
Wow, I'm going to come down and check you out.
Oh, yeah, I have items as cheap as $30, but I know those aren't going to last very long.
No, I better get them.
Little key pouches, and I've got little kind of evening-type bags for like $40 and $50, so.
Mm-hmm.
And scarves are $40, $50,
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll see you there then. Geez, thanks for being on our program.
Yeah,
totally.
Have a very Merry Christmas.
And you too. Thank you, Dorothy Grant on CITR 101.9 FM.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, that was Dorothy Grant. She's hired a clothing designer. She has her own labels, and she has a Christmas special coming up here pretty soon. And so we'll give you more information as we get closer.
Yeah.
So
can you imagine selling clothing out of a Vancouver hotel room?
Well, it's hard to catch Dorothy because mm-hmm. she's always traveling somewhere,
Yeah.
She was in New York and Chicago or wherever. And
wow. We're so proud of her.
Yeah, she, maybe she should have a clothing rack on a jet plane or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the next one will be on a private jet. That's where you're going to find her clothing.
My very tenuous claim to fame mm-hmm. is that Dorothy's grandfather was my grandfather's brother, so we're sort of cousins. She's from the Raven side, and I'm from the Eagle side.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're all from Idaburg, and but she took an idea and made something out of it.
Well, and she also took direction from Bill Reed, you know, an elder. She heard what he said, and she followed up on it. You know, he recognized that there was a need to create pride in our community and to know where you're coming from, and I think that's what it takes, is that people need to sit down and listen to their elders when they speak and fill that void in the world.
Well, I see a bunch of other people listen, too, because there are a lot of others from other nations are doing very much the same thing.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't really too long ago you didn't see very much of this type of clothing.
No.
On just in everyday use.
And you know what I like about it is that, you know, how the couch and sweaters were basically, you know, mass produced. Nobody has done that with our West Coast designs yet, you know. And I think that if we don't do it, somebody else will. And that's why it's important for us to step up to the challenges in life.
Yeah, we're constantly having to fight off these people who are claiming, well, anybody can do Northwest Coast style.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they get around it.
Yeah, we have a lot of Cree people, right, mm-hmm. who are carving West Coast style and that.
Well, one of the things about it, though, is when you get other First Nations people from wherever, begin learning to do the carving and all the rest of it, they'll always name who their teacher was so that you know where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get somebody like Todd DeBreeze, who's teaching cedar bark weaving,
yeah,
he does not teach the Haida style to anybody who isn't Haida.
Yeah.
But he'll teach all the general weaving techniques, because they're weaving techniques mm-hmm. all over the world.
Yeah.
And so it's not just something that belongs to us.
Yeah.
And when Dorothy mentioned that about, you know, she started this weaving spruce root.
Mm.
Spruce root is probably some of the most beautiful work you can find. In fact, our sails on our canoes were made from spruce root.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a technique, and I've only heard it described as a double weave.
Yeah.
Which is unique, I would say, to Haidas. But we didn't have textiles, you know, like canvas and stuff. But they did find some people digging around in caves, some kind of ologists. And they found some material in a cave they thought at first was canvas.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be that split spruce root. And there was something like 870 knots per square inch or something like that, which is just incredibly fine work. Mm-hmm. And so all of the people here on the coast, you know, they all have their own techniques, their own designs. And when we see people wearing that regalia with such pride, you know, like Dorothy said, you know, it gives you a sense of not only who you are, but where do you belong in this universe?
Yeah.
Everybody has a place in the universe. One of the women, well, that comes to my Haida class is Polish.
Mm-hmm.
And she was adopted, so she didn't know much about it. And then I told her one day, I said, you know, one of the people I work with in the in this art mentoring program that was started by Mike Dansley is also Polish. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned that they have a Polish social club. So maybe I ought to go over there and see what.
Yeah.
So she did.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hadn't seen her for a couple of weeks, and then she came to the class, and she was just bubbling over. She was so happy. She said, I found there's one place on the planet that's mine. She says, you can't imagine what that feels like.
Uh-huh.
I told her, that's what I'm telling you. That's how we feel about it.
That's right.
And there's one place in the universe that's ours.
That we can go to. Well, did you hear about that Chinese? There was a lady that lived on the outskirts of Chinatown. Her mom told her she was Chinese. She said she believed that she was Chinese until she became an adult living in the same house. And then she found out she was from U.S. Minister and that she was Native. And she's the matriarch of her people.
Wow.
She went and got her status card, and she feels all better about herself now.
You know, there's a lady here in town. I won't mention her name because maybe she doesn't want anybody to know.
Uh-huh.
But about 1987 or so, I came here to Vancouver for this Save the Stein. It was the second one out here at Mount Currie.
Yeah.
And there were over 20,000 people there. Mm-hmm. And people were out there camped in tents. And I stopped and I was talking to this one lady. And I gave her my phone number, told her I was, you know, I lived in Calgary. And one day I got a call from her. And she just said, I wanted to make sure you still had my number because she wanted to ask some questions. And she mentioned to me that, you know, she wanted to find out more about her family because she didn't know why she was always referred to as the Indian in the family.
Mm.
And so this went on. I don't know. I'd come into Vancouver, whatever, and if I happened to run into her or call, you know. So anyway, another time she telephoned in Calgary. And she was very, very upset about, distraught, I guess you might say the word. She didn't know. And I asked her, well, what's wrong? And she, her mother was in a nursing home. So she went and asked her mother, finally, why did they call me the Indian in the family? She said, you mean nobody ever told you? She said, no, what? She said, your father was Cree. And the wife's parents didn't like him because he was Indian.
Oh.
So they pretty well drove him away.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, now I don't know what to do. Well, I said, well, you're still the same person, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, I said, okay, now you know who you are. Go find out what that means.
Yeah.
And so she did that, and mm-hmm. she's been doing a lot of work with Native people all through the West Coast here all the way up into the Yukon.
So she's gone Cree on us.
Yeah, she's gone Cree.
Yeah.
So she really, it's something she felt inside her. She knew that there was something there and she just wouldn't let it go until she finally found out.
Wow, it's amazing how many Indians are coming out of the closet.
Well, some of them didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, like that one that thought she was Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in your language class that you have, you said you have a Polish person there who's come to learn, you know, the Haida language. But you've also had a guy, Kit, from Art T. Oh.
Yeah, he's from Singapore.
He was from Singapore.
Yeah, his name was Kit Wong, and we used to tease him and call him Kit Wonga.
And now he's gone back to Singapore, and he's going to come back, but now he's gone back knowing a little bit of the Haida language and the culture.
Well, you know, he's quite an amazing person. In many ways, he and Todd DeVries are very much alike.
Uh-huh.
Because both of them just have this thirst for knowledge, and they're always going, like Todd knows all the stuff about the ancient Egyptians and about the constellations, the stars. And it's the same way with Kit.
Yeah.
And one of the things I was talking to the timekeepers, these are the people all throughout Mesoamerica, including North America, that were the ones who are responsible for maintaining the calendars, mm-hmm. for keeping knowledge of time. But this was always kept from people. It's secret kind of things. And they finally, there was a meeting in Arizona a few months ago, which I wasn't able to attend. But anyway, Hopi, filmmaker, he was on one of our programs recently, Victor Masiebsa.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Last week,
mm-hmm. yeah. And so he brought a film with him to talk about some of those things, to see what people thought. And also I had some information from a history keeper in New Zealand, from the Waitaha people, in which he said the time for secrecy is over. It's time for us to start talking about these things that we've kept secret for so many centuries. And so gradually we'll start talking about them, but some we won't talk much about in public because people have a tendency to take things and go nuts with them.
Like uh-huh.
this whole thing about the end of the world,
yeah.
which was not, nobody ever said that, but mm-hmm. that's what Hollywood did with it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why Kit is one of those people that has that kind of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really look forward to when he returns.
Me too. And he has this company called ARTEA. Mm-hmm. He combined the two words. And what he's doing is selling this medicinal tea, but he also engages artists to design the packaging. That's why he calls it art tea.
Yeah, and yeah. He doesn't call it medicine because
herbal,
then
I guess.
You start getting into problems with Health Canada or whomever.
Yeah.
So these are teas, and he makes them himself.
Uh-huh.
So he learned these recipes from his family, his own family.
Yeah.
You know, he was telling me about even the indigenous people of Taiwan and all that whole area of Singapore.
Yeah.
And we don't even think about people as being indigenous from those different areas. We think we're the only ones.
Yeah.
And so that's what we want to do with Language to Language, is we want to start spreading that out so we can start learning.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Sullivan, the former mayor of Vancouver, has a program called Language Fluency, I think is what it is. And they start with three concepts. One is a greeting, you know, like hello.
Yeah.
A German might say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish speak might say hola or something like
the
that.
The Okanagan people say white. Yeah.
And the Southern Haiders say oi.
Oi. Oi.
Like oink without a K. Oh, just oi.
Oi.
And then the other is to greet someone. And Dangula is about the easiest one in Haida.
Dangula.
That's are you good?
Are you good?
And so you can answer either ang, which is yes, or ge, which is no.
Ge.
And then you can.
Are you good? No, I'm gay.
Are you gay?
Gay.
No. And then the other is not only the greeting, but then leave-taking. What do you say? And like goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
So what I found is that most languages don't have a termination of a relationship that way that you have in English. Mm-hmm. Goodbye just means get rid. But originally it didn't. We'll have to find out.
Yeah.
So in Haida, what we do is even if somebody's dying, we say, who's
Kling Song. Kling Song.
That's literally, I'll see you again.
Uh-huh.
But the way it was described to me was long ago, someday, I'll see you again.
Yeah.
Long ago, someday.
Oh.
So what it is like I'm sitting across the table here from you.
Uh-huh.
I see you how you look at this moment.
Yeah.
And say 20 years passes before I see you again.
Yeah.
So when I see you, I'll see you as how you are then and how you are now. So I still have these two pictures of you. And so but as long as I carry these pictures, whatever conversation we're having now, we can pick it up again whenever. It doesn't matter how many years pass, we'll pick it up again.
Yeah.
So there's never a termination.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're looking at is.
And you taught me how to say thank you in Haida. Like, thank you in 20 different ways.
That's how
complicated it is.
The simplest, how. And a lot of times people would say hoa, which is sort of almost being flippant.
Oh.
But if you want people to know that you're sincere, it has a bit more intimate, a little bit more intimate, I guess, is say hoa. Because now you're taking the time to enunciate it so that it's sort of like I listened to Frank Sinatra one time talking about singing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one of the things he learned was how to carve his words. So when he sings, he can make every word have meaning more than just the word itself.
Yeah.
And so it's not so much what you say, it's how you say it.
Yeah.
So you can either be like, for example, if somebody says something, gee, you're dumb.
Uh-huh.
I can either say something like, I understand. Or I can just say, I know.
Or you could just say, howa.
Gee, that's good, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for saying I'm dumb and ugly.
Yeah, so That's the other thing I want to learn how to learn, too, is from all these different languages as we get them here, because I'd like to start with A, you know, Anishinaabe, Arabic, Aleut, whatever.
Yeah.
And work our way through all these different languages so that we can start retaining a feeling of community where we can all say, or if I said, how are you, you'd know I'm thanking you. Or if somebody says some other word to me in their language, I'll know that.
Oh, I felt ridiculous yesterday. I was talking to one of my aunties at the Elder Center, and she said, Weeksus, and I don't know what that means. I just said, oh, hey, hi. But that's what she was asking me. I think she was asking me, how am I? Weeksus.
Well, you should have asked her.
Well, I did. Well, that's such a common word in our language. I should know it, right? But I think there is a mental block that happens with First Nations people in particular due to the whole residential school experience and having the language taken from us. And we're just not comfortable with the language.
Yeah,
but I do know that one word, Gaelic Hasla, which means thank you. But then people will say it differently depending on where they're from. So Galakasla or Galakasla, you know. There's a fine line when it comes to our languages, and sometimes it's just a difference of a vowel. Like the people of this territory speaking a Salish language, there's just a difference of a word or a letter, you know.
Well,
between the dialects.
It's the same way in Haida. Like, if I'm asking somebody or greeting someone and I say, Sinu Dung Haidam, that's how we would say it in the north. The Masset people would add an extra syllable, Ga Sinu Dung.
Oh,
and then we'd say Haidam, but Masset will say Aidam. So Ga Sinu Dung Aidam. And so the young people, when they hear some of these things, they don't, the speaker isn't slowing down and enunciating the whole word. So they'll say, Adam. Instead of Adam. Hey. It's an H sound.
Oh.
Adam. Like
Hayden.
You got, like I got a sore throat and I got something stuck in there. Adam.
Adam.
And then Skidigit, the southern ones, will say it the way we do in the north. Sinudung, Adam. They pronounce that G a little bit. They spell it as Qaydung, I think.
Qaydung.
Qaydung. So, yeah, each one of them has a little different. And what I want to do, and I fervently hope people will do, is that they don't try to create one dialect. They don't try to just combine them.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
Well, when I was in the U.S. Navy, I went to Norway a couple of times. We were command for NATO, and what the Norwegian government did was they introduced a national dialect.
Yeah.
And they had all kinds of problems because what was happening is the dialects from these small communities started mixing in with it, and pretty soon nobody could understand anybody because they were all mixing them all up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've been listening to My Girls, or Ma. Do you say My Girls or Girls?
It's just short for my girl.
Yeah, My Girl. Yeah. And they use language in their music, along with people like Suzanne Aglicart and Kashtan. Remember Kashtan? They were so popular when they first came out and started singing in a language, and people just flocked to go see them sing.
Well,
you know?
What about the guys from Lilwet?
Kalan Wee.
Kalan Wee, yeah.
And that means listen. And they're singing the language with the use of, like, reggae in the background.
Yeah, reggae.
And they're mixing it up pretty good.
They've used reggae beat with their own the words of their language.
Yeah.
Their traditional songs.
So we'll play a little bit of them a little bit later, but let's continue on with My Girls. And this is a song that is sung in their language, and I can't pronounce it, but you'll hear. They say, how would you pronounce that? It's Astam. Oh, Astam means come here, right? So here it is. Check it out.
Astam. Us dumb, oh, us a suck. Us dumb, oh, us a suck. Us dumb, oh, us a suck. Hey, 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 hey. Us dumb, oh, us a suck. Us dumb. Us dumb, oh, us a suck. Us dumb. For so many years, cried so many tears. Us dumb, oh, us a suck. Us dumb. Our children were taken away. Be better off, that's what they say. But look what they've done, and now who has won? My people, the ones who have paid. A star, oh, that's a star. A star, a star, a star, a star, a star. For so many years, cried so many tears. A star, oh, was a star. Language was stripped from their tongue.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. We were just talking about language. There's International Mother Language Day. If you don't know about that, it's on February 21st. And International Language Day was proclaimed by the General Conference of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, also known as UNESCO, in November 1999. On May 15th, 2009, the United Nations General Assembly, in its resolution AIRES 61266, called upon members of the states to promote the preservation and protection of all languages used by people of the world. So don't forget that date, February 21st. Actually, Woody and I are probably going to do something for that day in celebration of languages. Maybe we'll do it here, right here at CITR, have a big event so that we can celebrate languages with you, the listeners of CITR. But next week on the show, we're going to have a group, a band called the... soul carvers, they call themselves. One of them is Pat Gambler, and he's actually Cree, but he also carves West Coast style. He lives on the Squamish Reserve with a couple of the bros, the Williams boys, and they'll be here as well to sing some songs to you, some Christmas songs, and to promote the fact that they will be playing at the Fairview on December 31st, along with Murray Porter, who's from the Six Nations Reserve, has a wife by the name of Elaine Bomberry, who is his personal manager. They'll be telling you more about that event next week, right? So you definitely want to check it out. And we're looking at ways that we can celebrate language. And one of the people that we brought up earlier was Cashed In. And I'm going to play some music from them right now. Here they are. Oh, that's the M Girls.
My Girls.
My Girls. Yay. Yep. My Girls. Now let's check out Cashed In. Here they are on CITR. A Blast from the Past.
This one doesn't work.
Okay, this song is called Shinayu.
I can hear it on my ear.
Come on,
joining us on Language to Language. We'll see you next week between 2 o'clock and 3 with Soul Carvers. Woody?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for letting us come into your house. And we look forward to talking with you again. So we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
One campus, one station, over 40 live broadcasts. Tune in every weekend as CITR provides live coverage of UBC varsity sports. With over 40 live internet and radio broadcasts in men's and women's hockey, basketball, and volleyball, CITR is your voice for Thunderbird athletics.
Our next broadcasts are on Friday, January 10th and Saturday, January 11th. Tune in to 101.9 FM for a Friday basketball doubleheader as the UBC men's and women's basketball teams take on the University of Alberta. Broadcast starts at 6 p.m. for the women's game and 8 p.m. for the men's game. Both Thunderbird squads will be back in action Saturday night as the men's and women's basketball teams take on the University of Saskatchewan. CITR coverage will begin at 5 p.m. for the women's game and 7 p.m. for the men's game. All games will be broadcast live on 101.9 FM CITR.
It's a stressful time of year, which means it's more important than ever to take good care of yourself. Take this moment to feel good. Follow along with this mini meditation and reduce stress quickly. Breathe in and hold for 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale slowly. Breathe in once more and hold for 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale slowly. Visit students.ubc.ca/feelgood for other ways to live well, feel good, and achieve success.
$1 billion on the ground, all stretched out and uncurled, would extend about 4 times around the circumference of the world.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the West End at
212 Productions Limited, The Baker and the Chef, Bang on T-shirts, Bistrude Records, Dream Apparel and Articles for People, Don Levy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattoon, Fortune Sound Club, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematic, Perch, Project Space, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca. On Saturday, December 14th, Good for Grapes celebrate the release of their highly anticipated debut album, Man on the Page, at the Vogue Theater.
Please escort me to the end.
The concert wraps up their Canadian tour and features guests The River and the Road, Northcote, and Jordan Klassen. Tickets for Good for Grapes can be purchased at Northern Tickets, Zulu, and Red Cat Records, or online at Northern Tickets.